Hello, welcome to the Villa Talks podcast. Welcome to the post-match rant. We are back, second week in a row. I left it open last week. I wasn't sure when we're going to come back, but the boys loved it so much that we are back this week and back to ready to talk about all things Villa. Carl's waiting in the background. I'll get him on in a second. Before we start, though, AJ, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Last week, somebody said they wish we were more enthusiastic in the opening, so I'm going to be upbeat today.
Let me try again. Let me get Carl on. Let's try again. Let me try again. Yeah. All right, ready?
Bye. Oh,
look at that face. You couldn't get more upbeat than that face.
No. Come on.
Yeah. Woo.
Spurs are done, mate.
They are done. They're cooked.
He said it. Yes, we'll be talking about the weekend's results, Spurs, Villa, Chelsea, Spurs, Arsenal. We'll be previewing the Olympiacos and Brighton games. We'll be talking about the news stories of the week, a couple of interesting tidbits relating to the Premier League rules, injury updates. We'll look, do some vital statistics as well. Pretty lowbrow statistics this week. We'll try our best. And then I was going to say we're going to do the Villa Vault, but I don't think Olympiacos and Villa have ever played against each other, apart from apparently I've been told reliably that we played against each other in the Next Gen tournament. So I'm going to do something slightly different Villa Vault.
We could do Brighton though, couldn't we? Because we're presumably not going to do two in a week, are we?
Between Olympiacos
and Brighton, there's not going to be another one, is there?
We're enthusiastic, but not that enthusiastic, I don't think.
But before we start, Omar, you said you were going to tell us about the Pepe's pasta, range that you've had for your team.
So the reason why we're a little bit late is because I called Pepe's at 7:30. They said it'd be ready by 8:00. Ordered the new Pasta La Vista 2.
Oh, good. Strong name.
Yeah, strong name. Chicken Pasta La Vista, Chicken XL, Peri Chips, Pepsi Max. Yeah. And got there at 8:00 and said, what's your order number? And did the old, look at the top. Yeah, it'd be about 5 minutes, mate. I was like, looked at the grill, there's nothing on there. I was like, this is not going to go down well. So 15 minutes later, managed to get my food, rushed back, ate as much as I could, and then got ready for the pod. Pasta La Vista 2, baby.
It's pretty good, baby.
Very impressed, yeah?
I was dubious about Pepe's doing pasta. It just feels too far outside of their oeuvre for me. I'm happy to take your recommendation, mate.
That was good. It was good. It reminded me a little bit of my mum's chicken pasta. So it was spicy, some fried onions in there as well, which was a surprise. Didn't expect that at all. Good amount of chicken. Chicken's always good there, to be honest. I do find with Pepe's, it depends which branch you go to. The one in Leamington is pretty good, I must say. I think 4 out of 5 probably, which is pretty strong.
That's a good score considering the service issues up front as well.
Knocking down to 3 for service, but
But on the food alone, 4. Yeah.
But as AJ mentioned on the WhatsApp group, their Peri Chips are unrivaled, aren't they? They're pretty good.
Yeah, superior to Nando's. I'm actually not a fan of Nando's fries. I tend to have a spicy rice when I go to Nando's. But
interesting choice.
The Peri fries in Pepe's elite level, and they've got like a garlic mayo type dip as well. Dip your Peri fries in that. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
When you said the word interesting, Omar, he was using that very loosely because I'm losing interest in AJ's side orders, I have to say.
Well, spicy rice is a bit of a mundane order, I must say. I expected more from you, AJ, to be honest. Yeah. Given your palate,
guys,
I think surprising that is to me.
I mean, there's how excited are any of the sides at Nando's, to be fair?
It's a fairly
mundane set of options, isn't it, really?
True. What's your choice of sides, Carl, before we get into the football, just quickly?
To be honest, I'll go for a chicken and chip. I'm very much a chicken and chip guy.
Right.
Only one side.
So I'm going for I think I usually only have one side.
I normally go corn, spicy rice and corn.
I'll go big on the chicken.
Yeah, half chicken minimum. But actually, the broccoli which they introduced recently is pretty nice.
Not like that. If I was to sum up that order, Carl, as a football player, former Villa player, I think that was a Mark Kinsella of orders. You know what you're going to get. It gets you from A to B.
That's fair enough.
And you probably don't notice it on the table, to be honest. So, but yeah, we'll leave it there. That's my segue into Aston Villa.
Perfect way to leave it.
Perfect way to leave it. So yeah, we're going to do usual format this week. So last week was a bit of a one-off because obviously we've been away for so long. So this week we're going to do from the stands of Villa Park, hero and villain of the week, reviewing the Chelsea game. I always get that wrong. Vital statistics, previewing the Brighton and Olympiacos game, and then we'll do Villa Vault. I was going to do a slightly different one, but as AJ mentioned, we've got the Brighton game, so we could try and do that in the background. Maybe
up to you, mate.
Yeah, no, we'll do it. Which one should we start? Should we start with hero and villain of the week? Should we do that? Should we mix it up a bit?
Why not?
Yeah, I'm gonna do the video, so be warned.
Oh.
Do you remember the videos? Do you remember the intro?
Yeah. Oh, God, I can't wait to see
it
again.
Run the rhythm.
You're close to being villain of the week.
It's so good. You loved it last time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. I think I've changed as a person in the meantime.
We all have, mate. We all have.
Yeah.
No, evening so, all to all this thing. But yeah, go on, Carl. Over to you, mate.
Well, should we start off with hero of the week?
Yeah.
So course. I haven't chosen. I'm going to let sort of us all make a group decision on which of the two I'm going to go for. I've got a preferred choice, but you know, it's a democracy, isn't it? So first off, Morgan Rogers. Scored three consecutive Premier League home games. All three, good goals. I don't think he had his best game against Chelsea, but no one did. So first nomination, Morgan Rogers. I mean, mainly, I know this is meant to be just over the week, but as I say, three consecutive home games in a row scored, making us sort of barely miss JJ as well. I think he's been much better than I ever expected him to be, particularly in the short term. He's my first nomination. Second nomination is this pod. Coming back on Monday. The next day, Unai signing a new contract.
Oh.
It can't be a coincidence, can it? It can't be a coincidence.
No.
My preferred choice would be us, but I'm an egomaniac, so I'm bound to say that. But any other options from you guys? Any preferred out of the two?
Well, we've had Danny Hoxton say my hero was VAR.
Yeah,
who would have thought it? Although on that same front, you could say the referee was villain of the week for missing.
For not seeing a blatant push.
Very obvious push.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is going to segue into Carl's villain before we finish talking about the hero. But on the VAR thing, I know we're all a bit one-eyed when it comes to our teams, but I've seen Chelsea fans saying it wasn't even a foul. Like, it's obviously a foul. And then on Match of the Day, they were like, was it clear and obvious? Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it was an obvious foul. The referee missed it. It led directly to the goal. Like, VAR did exactly the job in those circumstances that it was supposed to do. So, I mean, I'm loath to give it hero of the week, although perhaps refactoring in some of the decisions in the Spurs-Arsenal game as well. But, I'm loath to give it hero of the week because all it did was do its job properly. It's a good nomination, and it was very frustrating seeing the reaction to that decision because it's exactly what VAR was brought in to do.
Yeah, Pochettino after the game says no one in the ground thought it was a foul. You could audibly hear people shouting foul within the ground, and I was shouting foul as soon as it happened. It's just bullshit. It was so obvious. I was when the ref didn't give it, I thought there was no way VAR were going to overturn it because ref clearly must have seen it. How hasn't he seen it? So he just thinks it wasn't enough. But he must have said, oh, I didn't see a push. And they went, well, you might want to go and have a look then.
I'm surprised he overturned it, to be honest, because it was an obvious push. I thought it was a definite foul. But normally a referee, when he's there looking at it 3 yards away and doesn't give it, you know, what is he going to look at on the TV screen that's going to make him think, oh, I missed that? He was right in front of it. I don't understand how
I don't really understand it.
Yeah. My other nomination for Hero of the Week is Unai Emery. I know he could be Hero of the Century, but I just thought his interview was very, in a series of classy interviews that we're getting used to, no excuse culture, etc. But to reframe the interview, and we'll come on to the media reporting of the match as well in a second, but to reframe the interview and say, you know, he's very happy with the result and we've achieved our first objective, whilst mentioning the performance wasn't great, but, you know, not putting too much pressure on the players. I think throughout this season, that no excuse culture is obviously filtered down to the players, where I think if he was talking about injuries and suspensions and bad luck like other managers, or the amount of games, then I think that creeps into the players' heads a little bit subconsciously, maybe. Yeah. I think that, again, another reason why. But then you could say that every week, because he does that every week. So that's my only other nomination, I would say.
Well, just to build on that, I mentioned in the group, you know, after this weekend, we're guaranteed Europa League, guaranteed top five with 3 games to spare. If you told us that at the beginning of the season, then we'd be delighted. And obviously, you know, we're all quite bullish about our chances of, we were bullish about our chances of getting into the Champions League last week. Actually, our position has improved because Spurs lost and we got a point. It's in our hands now. Like, if we at least match Spurs' results, we get the Champions League. So, you know, their 2 games in hand, they can't catch us with their 2 games in hand now. So I think, you know, as a tipping point weekend, it's still significant. And it didn't feel like that because of the nature of the performance and the result, perhaps. And another 2-goal lead let slip, which is, you know, becoming a little bit of a habit if you think about United, Brentford and this one. But I think you're right, Omar, to mention Unai, because cumulatively across the season, obviously he's done brilliantly. And this season, this weekend, we've qualified for the Europa League already. Yeah, and we're finishing above United for the first time in a million years, finishing ahead of Chelsea again. Brighton, who were on par with us last season, completely fallen away. Different circumstances, of course.
Let's hope they continue to fall away as well.
Well, yeah, indeed. So, good shout. But I think I would go Rodgers. I'm not as arrogant as Carl, so I can't give it to us.
That's fair enough.
Let's talk about Rodgers then, just quickly, because obviously the reason why we do Hero Villain of the Week is talk about the match. So let's talk about the match a bit more in depth. That first half, we weren't fantastic, but we did look threatening when we did attack, as opposed to second half where we didn't just look completely lost. But in that first half, how impressed were you with that second goal, the finish? How impressed have you been, Carl, just in generally speaking with Rodgers in his last 3 home games in particular, since he signed? And what do you think long-term future holds for him at Villa in terms of position, what he can do at Villa?
I've been really impressed. As I say, the biggest compliment is that, you know, Ramsey being out for the rest of the season could have been a real blow. And actually, I think Ramsey's a great player, but we haven't missed him really. And it's just how direct he is. They're very similar players, but they're slightly different statures, but they're quite similar in how they're quite direct. Like, they sort of look at the shortest distance from where they are to goal, and just sort of, he's so big. Like, I didn't realize he was as big as he was, and so powerful. But he also looks like he can't run, but then he's surprisingly swift. I have to be honest, when we was buying him, I hadn't noticed him in the match against Middlesbrough. I hadn't noticed he was even on the pitch. I didn't know he was a special player. And so I wasn't particularly excited about signing him, but, you know, in Unai we trust. But I suppose that's where the biggest surprise is that I thought we'd be bringing him in. He might get a few minutes in Europe. But he, like, I want his name on the team sheet every time I look at it now. I want Rodgers to be playing.
Hmm. AJ, how impressed are you with his composure in front of goal? With look at the Bournemouth goal we talked about last time. This goal where he's sort of seen where the keeper is, and I think two of his goals so far, the one against Brentford and this one, where he's looked to use the defender as a bit of a screen almost to get the ball and finish.
Yeah, and a couple of the clips, I agree with Carl. I wasn't expecting him to be pulling up trees in his first half a season. I thought we'd be expected to see more from him next year after he'd bedded in a little bit. But in the clips when he came in, the one thing you would say is, those sorts of shots from the edge of the box, and as you say, using a defender as a screen, or, the little quick move it out your feet and find a corner. There did seem to be a few examples of that in his Middlesbrough career as well, and that was something that stood out of those clips. And he just seems to have taken to the Premier League just so easily, and I think a big part of that is the management and the environment, and it must be a very easy group to come into at the moment and play in, because everybody's happy. Everyone's got a great relationship with the manager. It's very clear what's expected of you as a player. And I think it's never going to be easy stepping up to the Premier League, but I think that environment probably makes it as easy as it can be for somebody. And again, I think probably, I wouldn't be surprised. It seems like Emery is a very direct and he tells you when you do something wrong. He tells you when you do something right. I wouldn't be surprised if Emery had said to him, similar to the conversation we've just been having, look, we weren't expecting to have to play you this often. So here's what I want you to do. But really, there's no pressure on you. I wouldn't be surprised if he's had that sort of conversation with him and said, just do what you can for the team. And here's what I expect. And again, I think that probably helps. And I think, again, especially second half, nobody played particularly well. Everybody was very tired. But again, another really good goal, a really important goal. Mm. Arguably, the keeper could probably have done a bit better as near post, but it was a bit unsighted, as you say, using the defender as a screen. But yeah, I couldn't be happier, really, with, for the initial £8 million we've paid. Couldn't be happier with where he is and what he's done so far.
There was an interview with Rodgers where he was talking about how Unai refers to him as a championship player. And it might be that he's going, we're not expecting loads from you. You've just come from the championship. You're a championship player. We want to improve you. And that must take so much pressure off him, as you say. And maybe that's just allowed him to play a bit more freely and show what he's got.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Villain of the week, Carl.
I think that the winner this week has already won it about five or six times since we've started doing the pod, but it's the media. And it's kind of just the media's ignorance of us and disrespect for what Unai and we've done this season. In the run up, when the Guardian do their sort of previews of the games, it was all, the preview of this one was all about Chelsea, who are literally just a mid-table team with absolutely nothing to play for. That shouldn't be the big headline in what the media are talking about. And it was a very specific issue that Chelsea had. And it's like, this is not the big issue in this match. Like, this is a team trying to get into the Champions League for the first time since it's been called the Champions League. And it's like, and you're talking about, I don't know, how the balance of Chelsea's midfield. Who gives a shit? Other than Chelsea fans, though, really, anyone watching this, no one gives a shit about Chelsea's shit team.
Yeah, I agree.
And one of the thing that happened after the game, before AJ can go and have a rant about it all as well, but we drew, and the BBC, as part of the headline, was that we'd left the door wide open for Spurs. It meant we were 7 points clear of them. They've still got the top, all of the top three they still had to play. It's barely ajar, rather than wide open. It's pathetic. And it's almost like the whole of sort of football media is willing Spurs to get over the line. Like, I thought the commentary in the our game against Chelsea, there was a lot. It was the same guy who did the Europa game, wasn't it, on penalties, yeah, that seemed to just have a massive dislike for Martinez. And I don't know, a lot of this could be all conspiracy and we're thinking that everyone's against us, but it does seem that there's a lot of disrespect at the moment.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I think that with The Guardian, I was meaning to go and do a thing and go back and count through all of those, because they do every game week, they do a 10 things to look out for this week, and they basically look at every game. And I'm sure 70% of our games, the main theme of their piece is about the opposition. But I wanted to go back and check, but I'll be honest and say I haven't. So we'll just say it's about 70%. Yeah, yeah. And it drives me mad. Not because I actually think it's good for us in a lot of ways if the media pay us less attention, but it annoys me because I don't get it. Like you say, in this situation, we are one of the stories of the Premier League this season, if not the story. You know, if City end up winning it again routinely, you look at the bottom three. All right, they've got the points deductions, but the bottom three are probably the bottom three you'd have expected to go down, or you know, the four that are really down there left scrapping are probably the four that you would have picked even without points deductions. There's nothing interesting happening there. United and Chelsea are still rubbish. That's potentially a story, but is it? It's not really. We're the story of this season, and nobody seems to be interested in it. And that's what I find weird. Like, not that it's. I don't really care that there's a bias, and I understand. If you're in the media, then the big globally supported clubs, you get more clicks if you say more stuff about them, you know. And even like today, there's been loads of stuff after Arsenal beat Spurs at the weekend, going, Arsenal are undefeated against the Big Six this season. Well, they've lost twice against us. And I know we're not in the Big Six.
What about the actual top six?
Yeah, and I do get as well, like a lot of people saying the Big Six is not, it's still a thing because you look at the revenue and that matters, and we'll talk about that again when we come back to the rule changes, etc. That matters, and the Big Six are still miles ahead of everyone on revenue. Even if we get in the Champions League, it's not going to bridge that gap. But it's just, I don't get stuff like that where there's not even an addendum to it. Like, you can say undefeated against the Big Six, but mention the facts, you know. And last week we had that table up, didn't we, against Big Six clubs, and we were top of that table. So you know, it's just frustrating and annoying. I fully endorse putting them I know it's a bit Matt Letizia to rail against the mainstream media, but the fact that
makes you think, though, doesn't it?
The fact that they're not interested in our good news, in our, you know, plucky underdog story, makes you think, doesn't it? Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, very interesting. It's also slightly annoying that Glenn Hoddle's I think it was Si, said about two ex-Chelsea players being pundits. It was a bit annoying that Glenn Hoddle spent the whole pre-match talking about Villa, had no clue about us, talking about how we're a counter-attacking team and Watkins has done well because we're a counter-attacking team. And I was thinking, oh, you ain't got a clue. But then we end up playing the match like a counter-attacking team and Watkins didn't do anything. So it was a bit annoying on that front. Yeah. But again, it just shows. And he's probably thinking, you know, I know what I'm talking about. But
yeah, I was right.
He hasn't watched us.
To be fair, mate, Joe Cole did make 12 starts for Villa. So,
Sorry.
Yeah, don't forget that. So he
legend.
He's 50-50, isn't he?
That's about it. Goal against Burnley, that's about it. I don't think he did anything. Someone else mentioned something else. Who was it? I think it was Michael said about Olsen. Let's get this up again. People get on Olsen's back. Actually thought, at the ground, definitely the fans were very much with him and singing The World's Number Two, which I thought was quite funny, to be honest. Some people said it was cringe, but I thought it was quite funny. Offline, obviously, you're still getting a lot of stick. AJ, what did you think of Olsen? Obviously, it looks like Martinez, and I'll read the latest news in a second. Looks like Martinez is going to be... Actually, I'll do it now. I'll read it verbatim. This is from Argentinian in the know.
Are you going to read it in Spanish?
I was going to say, yeah. When you say verbatim, say the Spanish first. Come on.
All right, let's do that. Let's do it then. Here we go. Dubu Martinez se hizo estudios, supo salir a tiempo y evitó un lesión muscular. Va a entrenar diferenciado unos días y apunta a taja el domingo, Brighton. Si no llegue, va a jugar la vuelta de semifinales de Conference League. No se pierde ese partido importante.
Very good. It's like Gaston was in the room with us.
Yeah.
Basically he's saying he
went better than I thought, to be fair.
It did surprise you, didn't I? You're fully ready to do it. I'll probably pronounce a few words wrong, but still GCSE Spanish coming in play. I think he's saying there that Martinez is training by himself away from the game. He's going to miss, obviously, Thursday game, so suspended, but he's trying to get back in contention for the Brighton game. If not, he'll be back for the away leg. So good news, I would say, given, you know, he went off half-time and you're a bit worried. Tielemans, I'm doing the news stories of the week already, but Tielemans is another one that got injured at that. In the game in the first half, he was a big miss, wasn't he, in that first half? Because I thought we started the first 10-15 minutes really well. He was quite an important part of that. And since he went off, and McGinn came in the centre, which I've been saying that he should be playing the centre more often. I just don't think Louise and McGinn worked, did it, in that central partnership? Of the match as well.
I actually think Tielemans going off was a bigger issue than Olsen. I thought Olsen had a good game. He obviously made that big save. There was one moment, which I guess sort of illustrates the issue, where Carlos could have played it back to him, but it was outside his box.
Yeah.
He wanted to play it back, but because Carlos had progressed too far, and then Carlos sort of half tried to clear it, and that led to a corner, which I think almost led to the goal. Is that right? I can't remember.
Yeah. Palmer
went straight through.
Yeah. To the chance, and then that was the Olsen recovery save. Yeah. So, I think the save was great, but the lead up to it, I think that confusion doesn't happen if it's Martinez, either because Carlos has the confidence to play it back to him or because Martinez's positioning is better in the first place. But Martinez, as someone in the comments has said, is the best goalkeeper in the world. So any sub goalkeeper is going to be a step down. And I thought overall, the bigger issue was the loss of control with Tielemans going off and our inability to play through the press, which he was a massive part of, which isn't to say that was working smoothly in the first half either, especially by the end of the first half. I think, as you say, Omar, first 15, 20, we were strong. Getting the early goal, I did think, especially off the couple of results that Chelsea were coming off, that once we went 2-0 up, that was probably it, really. But Tielemans going off just meant we couldn't play out at all. The Chelsea press was very good. I think I've seen a lot of Chelsea fans saying they feel like Caicedo is better when Enzo doesn't play. And I thought he had a very good game in midfield for them. If a bit annoying with his like fakery after the Luis challenge.
Yeah, trying to get Luis sent off. But Cucurella did well, I thought, in terms of coming into midfield alongside Caicedo. And then the defence, Thiago and Badish, I can't say his name, Badish, they did quite well as well, sort of building up play. So I think that helped Caicedo, because normally, I think with Fernandes, he's stuck by himself, isn't he? Trying to basically cover all the ground.
And I don't think you have to do that. Also, Thiago Silva was excellent in the matchup with Watkins, sort of almost the opposite of everything we were saying last week against Bournemouth, where every time, pretty much, we tried to play it up to Ollie, he couldn't keep it under control. Or Thiago Silva read it first. As soon as Tielemans went off and we were struggling to play it out short, we were also struggling to get it in direct to Watkins. We talked in the Bournemouth game about how that dynamic of us being able to do both of those things was what made it almost impossible for Bournemouth to defend against us. In this game, Chelsea managed to prevent us doing either of those things. And so the opposite was the case. And just the pressure kept building and building and building second half, because we just couldn't keep hold of the ball. And we looked very tired, didn't we?
Just to finish off, Carl, on the game, then we'll move on. Dougie Louise back in after suspension. I don't know about you. And I'll say to caveat this with Doug Lewis is probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite Villa players. But he's, I don't think he's looked, he's not looked good since he got back with his missus, to be honest. Yeah. But
she scored at the weekend though, to be fair.
She did against her old club, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good little finish.
Her first goal of the season. So maybe it's like a transfer of footballing powers or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Freaky Friday style. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where. I mean, we need him to recapture his form, don't we? He's so important to us.
Yeah, it is like integral to how we play. I don't think he's been very good in pretty much the most of 2024. He was brilliant in the first half of the season, but I wouldn't have brought him back in. I don't think. Right. I don't think I'd have. Yeah, I mean, I thought we'd sort of picked up. Our form had picked up a little bit, and I don't think it's because he's not playing. I think it's because the balance was better with McGinn and Tielemans. I'm not going to blame his girlfriends, because that would be a misogynistic way of thinking, which I'm sure you didn't really mean that.
I mean, we
really need, in these last sort of few games, we need an on-form Louise, particularly now Yuri's out for a couple of weeks. I think we always say that if McGinn's not playing well, then Villa don't play well. I think it can equally be said about John McGinn, Douglas Louise too.
Yeah. Have I frozen on your screen, by the way?
Yeah, I can hear you, but you seem to just... you're in shock from being called out on your misogyny.
Yeah,
a bit glitchy, mate.
All right. I think it's my laptop's playing buggers, but at least you can hear me. That's the main thing, right? No one wants to see me anyway, do they? I was going to do... I can't control anything. It's just frozen on me. I don't know what's happened. I don't think my MacBook Pro 2017 or whatever year it was is... it's taking this podcast streaming well. Well, hopefully it sorts itself out. Shall we move on to new stories of the week then? I won't play because I can't. But the big news is obviously the potential changes that are going to be coming up in the Premier League and what they voted for today. So basically they call it an anchoring system whereby what you can spend is limited to the revenue of the lowest club, and I think it's around five times the revenue.
Four and a half times the revenue.
Yeah. And Villa were one of the three or four clubs that voted against it, which is quite interesting, quite telling. I've seen a few people try and explain it online and referring back to the UEFA rules. I'm not sure if that is accurate, to be honest. But AJ, what are your thoughts firstly on the potential changes and also why Villa had voted against it?
Yeah, so my understanding of the rule is, I've seen a lot of people saying the reason Villa voted against it was because it disadvantages us, because we will have to adhere to the UEFA rules, because we'll be in the Europa League definitely, and 90% sure the Champions League. Which currently are, I think, 85% of revenue, and then that's going to scale down to 75% at the end over the next 3 years, and that's for all of your transfer fees, agent fees, coaches, and wages. Basically, has got to come in within that budget, and then this anchoring system on top of that. So we would be people saying we would be in a situation where, you know, because of the anchoring, you'll be able to spend 450 million quid. The only teams, by the way, that would have been stymied by that this season are Chelsea and perhaps United, depending on where they finish, but most likely only Chelsea. So it's going to make very little difference to most teams anyway. But actually, my understanding of it is that this is a rule in addition to the rules they've already agreed in the Premier League, which are to bring us in line with the existing UEFA rules anyway. So in the Premier League, you will still have this rule for everybody that says you can only pay 85% of your revenue in that big long list of transfer wages, etc., as I've already mentioned. And then this anchoring thing is on top of that. So all it really does is prevent runaway spending by the teams at the very top if they can generate significantly higher revenues, but they'd have to be a lot higher revenues than they already generate. They already generate loads more anyway. So if you're in that top bracket where you could spend 450 million and that's still within your 85% limit, then that doesn't really even anything out, because, you know, our total revenue was what, 190 million or something, 200 million, whatever it is. Yeah. So, you know, we're not going to be able to spend that amount anyway. So I'm sure the people, the guys at the club know what they're doing. And there's a reason why they've voted against it. But it does feel a bit weird, United, City and us being the only three teams that voted against, and then Chelsea abstained on the vote, I believe. Like that, I don't know, it feels like an odd mix for us to be in. Well, it's a good question. It's not like...
it's not a UN resolution, is it?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know.
Carl, your thoughts?
I think you just asked me my thoughts. I mean, my initial thoughts with regards to, I find it, is anyone else find it really boring that we spend 50% of our time around football now talking about financial fair play and finances and stuff like that? And I know how important it all is. But like, I just found myself Googling today. We've just announced a new club secretary who I think was Nazef's family lawyer for years and years. And I found myself Googling it. And as I was doing it, I was like, why am I doing this? Why does this matter to anyone? I don't know. I tried to understand what the rules, new rules are. From what my very limited knowledge, and I have an even more limited financial background, but is anything really going to change with regards to the current pyramid and where we are? I don't think it will. So I just kind of find myself trying to not think about it too much and just hope that us having the best coach in the world will be more than being able to spend an extra 50 million.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it does do is it does limit, like, it does prevent the teams at the top having kind of unlimited spending. And I think, you know, Gary in the comments has asked why have City voted against it? Well, those teams are in a better position to inflate their revenues than we are. They have much higher revenues to begin with. So it may limit them slightly, but it's not going to stop them spending more than anyone else, because they already have much higher revenues than anyone else. And I guess the thing with City is, a lot of what their charges relate to is artificially inflating their revenues through the various UAE-owned businesses, sorry, Abu Dhabi-owned businesses. So even if they inflate them endlessly, they can't spend endlessly with this ruling. And it is a kind of, I guess it's the first time there's been any sort of total cap on spending and any attempt to link what the guys can spend at the top relative to what the teams at the bottom can spend. So I do think it's significant in that sense, but at 4.5 times the revenue of the base revenue of the bottom clubs, and with the 85% of revenue cap sitting alongside it, it's not going to make a substantial difference. But I guess there's the possibility that once those rules are in place, you could gradually reduce that number. And one of the things I read, I think, in The Athletic was that the original proposal was for 4 times, and that wasn't going to get passed. So they increased it to 4.5. But I suppose there is the potential that you could gradually edge that down to try and make the competition more competitive. But again, then it's open to legal challenge and all of that. So, I mean, you're right, Carl. It's far less interesting than talking about the actual football. But it's almost unavoidable part of being a football fan now that it's football is such massive business. You can't really just watch the games, and, you know, if you're interested in what makes your club successful, then unfortunately, as dull as it is, you have to take at least a passing interest in some of this stuff.
Yeah, I to be honest, I quite enjoy learning about it all, but I understand from a footballing perspective, and a football fan perspective, it's not something that you want to be worried about. But I mean, in terms of principle, if there's a way that we can make things fairer and a bit more competitive, then I'm all for it. How that happens is difficult when there's vested interests across the board, and you know, every club has different views on it depending on what position they're in the table or what they're looking to do from a long-term, well, short, medium-term perspective. No one really looks at long-term in football, really, let's be honest. So, yeah, I guess we'll see. Part of football, as AJ says, it's, you know, being business-minded is important. And we, you know, our owners, let's not forget, as much good as they've done for our club and what they've done, they've made their money a few times over already with where Villa are on the table, what we're worth. And that's what they're in for. You know, they're rich, wealthy owners, and they've done that after throwing back. They're not in this. There is an element of enjoying the game and being a football fan, but you know, they're here to make money ultimately. So it's why it's important. And it will affect us until there's a change and we go back to what it was like in the early 90s and 80s and 70s, and which I don't think will ever happen. Then, you know, it's just the way it's going to be. Unfortunately, but yeah, I mean, that's the big story. Apart from that, really, the only other updates, news stories which we talked about already was injuries. Looks like Martinez will be back, as we mentioned. Tielemans apparently will miss the next two games. So Jacob Tanzwell writing in The Athletic that he'll miss obviously the home leg and he'll miss Brighton game, but they should be back for the away leg, which I think is a big boost because I thought he'd be out for the season, to be honest, the way he reacted.
Yeah.
My only thing with him is it does take him a couple of games to get back into it. But if there's a way that we can get him back for the run-in, because, you know, who knows where we're going to be by the time we play Liverpool, whether top four's cemented or not, I don't know.
Can I just say something? I know we were slagging off the media earlier, but Jacob Tanzwell's brilliant. Like,
he is.
It's so excellent. Refreshing to have, like, a proper journalist writing about Villa, like, knowledgeable. Tactically speaking, it's just everything he writes tends to be really interesting. So when I refer to the media, or when we do, as I haven't swore a lot on this pod, have I?
I won't use the word.
But you know, he's not included. He's clearly very good, and I know he's writing from a pro Villa point of view. But I mean, just generally, everything he writes, I find very interesting.
Yep, no, I agree. I agree with that. This is what was this? This was another piece of news to Jacob, talking about Jacob Tanzwell.
I mentioned this while she was offline. Put it back up. Go on.
Oh, you mentioned this already, have you?
Did. Yeah, I was googling this guy, and I thought, why am I googling this guy? Like, I don't care.
Tax instructing. But tax structuring is sort of part of my job, so it's interesting. Well, for individuals, not for companies, but that's quite interesting. All right, that's interesting. I guess we'll see what he does. I won't talk about that too much because you probably covered that already, as you said. Should we do vital statistics?
Can't wait for your in-depth piece on tax structuring, Obo. I'm looking forward to
We'll save that maybe for the summer. We're going to talk about.
Maybe we could get Bjorn Schumann's on for an interview.
Yeah, maybe.
What do you think?
Yeah. Why not?
Wasn't he an ABBA, Gary H says.
Was he? Maybe he's helping our entertainment side, you know, using Villa Park for concerts, maybe. I don't know. A la blues. Right, let's move on. Should we do vital statistics? And we'll use that as an opportunity to look at some of the stats I wanted to talk about, but also then preview the Brighton and Olympiacos games as well. I didn't get to play my video for the from the stands of Villa Park, so I'm going to play this one. So enjoy it. Yeah. If you don't enjoy it, tough.
Vital statistics, ladies and gentlemen! Vital statistics, vital statistics, what will the stats say?
That is the best one, to be fair.
It is, I was going to say that.
It's definitely better than the Heroes and Villains one.
What I would say is...
needs an upgrade, mate.
Yeah, I assume you've not cleared the IP, but we won't
get into we're not that making time. Any money from that anyway. Who cares?
Are you not?
I think
my OnlyFans does a huge business after each part.
I would pay for that. I would pay for that OnlyFans, definitely. Actually, depends how much it is. What would you be doing on OnlyFans anyway? Would it be normal OnlyFans? It would be different. Would it be something else?
Pay your 50 pence and you'll find out.
50 pence, is that right? Yeah. Is that how much you would charge?
Yeah, that's a bit low,
isn't it? I don't know. But anyway, first off, I want to talk about Ollie Watkins because Ollie Watkins has 19 goals in the Premier League. He was obviously visibly upset, but he was a bit gutted. He didn't score against Bournemouth and probably one of his best performances of the season. He wasn't at his best against Chelsea. And he's got, three league games of the season left to get this 20-goal target. Do you think it's a curse, this 20 goals? Because I feel like it's a curse on every Villa striker. Because Benteke was nearly there and he got suspended, I think. He scored against Chelsea, Liverpool. I can't remember who it was, and then he ended up getting suspended and missed the last game, so he couldn't get the 20 goals. Do you think there's a curse there that Villa players can't get the 20 goals? The last one was Peter Whyth, wasn't it?
No, I don't think there's a curse. I don't think we've had enough good seasons and enough good strikers in the last however many years to get anywhere near it. So, I mean, Watkins has had a phenomenal season, whatever. He's still, I think, the only player to have double-digit goals and assists in the Premier League. Which
and you got that he, 3 months ago or something.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's whether he gets 20 or not, it doesn't really matter. It'd be amazing if he does. And he's got three games to do it, two of which, you know, well, mind you, Liverpool aren't even playing that well. He'll get a chance in all those games, won't he? So unless he picks up an injury or whatever, he'll get a chance. He had a good chance late on against Chelsea, which obviously he didn't put away. But no, I don't think there's some sort of curse. It's a hard thing to do, to score 20 Premier League goals. So, you know, there must be loads of clubs who are in a similar position where they've not had a player who's done it ever or whatever. There must be loads. So I think he'll do it. He's still playing well. He's still getting chances. So I think he'll do it. But if he doesn't, you know, he's had a phenomenal season either way.
Look at his stats. Most non-penalty goals in the Premier League since Unai Emery first took charge. Courtesy of AVFC Stato, 31 goals. Joint with Haaland, if you take out penalties. That's pretty impressive, right, Carl?
Remember when, about a year ago? No, maybe a bit longer than that. When everyone was like, oh, why did we sell Danny Ings and not Watkins? Like, these idiots on Twitter or X, they've usually got either Jacob Ramsey or Douglas Luiz as their avatar, and they've got the letters S. Yeah, yeah. It's usually these guys who, it's insane that people were even thinking that. And Sam Cleary was one of them. himself, though, to be fair.
Worst. There were people saying Cameron Archer should get a run ahead of Watkins.
It's insane. Like, what I would say, though, is, and whilst I agree, there's clearly not a curse because they don't exist. But I think he's the sort of player where it will play on his mind. And he needs a chance where it's just instinctive. Like, if he has a one-on-one in each of these three games, right now I wouldn't fancy him to take any of them. But I could easily see him scoring a hat-trick of sort of very instinctive finishes. So I think it might be playing on his mind.
All right. We're winning 2-0 against Brighton. And it's 70 minutes into the game. And we get a penalty. Would you be like, go on, Ollie?
No, because he'll still end the season on 19 goals.
Yeah, this is my issue with the non-penalty goals thing. The reason he doesn't take penalties is because he's not as good at them as Douglas Luiz is. Like, and he was taking them and he missed some. So the whole, like, it doesn't, goals count the same. It doesn't make you a better striker if your goals came from non-penalties than someone who is a clinical penalty taker. So I do think the whole non-penalty goals thing is a bit
it feels thinny, more really. Like an achievement though, right? It feels
I know what I you mean, I, but it's like
I agree with you
I know it's quite a difficult skill to score penalties. Like it's you've got brilliant goalkeepers in front of you, but
he did it under pressure against Leo, hasn't he?
No, he did. Well. He did. I mean, if also
where would it have, yeah, I was going to say, where would it have gone if he hadn't slipped? Though that's what we don't know. That's the counterfactual we can't prove.
I mean, Brighton, just quickly, we'll do it back to front. We'll come on to Olympiacos in a second. So Brighton, just quickly, they played the weirdest team ever against Bournemouth, playing some youngsters. De Zerbi is Mr. Tinkerman, isn't he? He loves changing the team. But it does look like they've got a few players back. They had a few on the subs bench. They came on NC, so be one who's probably one of their best players. But they're still going to be missing quite a few. We've got a great record against Brighton, obviously. And that game on Sunday could legitimately be... decide top four. How do you approach that game if you are Unai Emery, bearing in mind obviously we've got the game on Thursday?
I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about the Brighton game. Not only in that I don't think we'll win the game. As I've said, I think fourth is already done. There's no way Spurs are coming back and taking fourth off us now. But I think after Thursday, what I hope is, see, and I wish we were talking about Olympiacos first, because if we
let's do that. Let's talk about Olympiacos. Yeah. This is your show, mate.
So I have a feeling it's not going to be a close match on Thursday. I think we'll win by 3 goals, or we'll lose by like 3 goals, and it'll be an absolute horror show. So I think that, and if that does happen, that kind of is going to sort of play into the thinking of what we do at Brighton. Because if we've either way, we kind of you think the tie's settled there. But Olympiacos aren't anywhere near as good as Lille. They shouldn't give us as good a match as Lille did, or two matches. But we are basically nearing asking fans to put their boots on and come and play for us at the moment. I can't even think what our sub bench will look like on Thursday.
They're gonna
be knackered, but that's why I just think it's gonna go one way or the other. We'll have a really fast start and blow them away, or we're going to really struggle and just sort of they're going to just hit us on the break.
I kind of hope Zaniolo Moreno are back, because I know they're
same.
You know, just to give a bit of depth to our team, especially Zaniolo. I think he's, because we haven't got Tielemans. I think Zaniolo is quite an important player, because then it allows Rodgers to go more central, which I think is quite important if you're playing Dougie and McGinn, because it's just a bit of strength in the middle, really, more than anything else. He did that against Arsenal really well. But Olympiacos, obviously not... AJ, probably not as good as, I think people have mentioned it already, probably not as good as Lille. Probably the hardest team that were left in the competition. But, you know,
They're third in Greece at the moment, which is not obviously not as anywhere near as tough a league as the French league, and Lille are third or fourth in France, I think, aren't they? But they've won five of their last seven, only lost one of those, which was away against Fenerbahce, which is obviously a very tough place to go. I think we were probably all quite relieved that we haven't got to go there. Not that Olympiacos looks particularly easy. They look like they have quite a spicy atmosphere as well. And they play a lot fewer games in Greece than we have to play. So they will probably be less tired than we are. I would expect us to win. I'm not complacent about it. You know, at this stage of the season, we are very tired. As you've mentioned, we have got a lot of injuries. And at the end of the day, it's a European semi-final. So you don't take that for granted, do you? It's not going to be a walkover by any means. Mm. But I would certainly expect us to win the home leg fairly comfortably, but no guarantees.
Yeah. All right, quiz for you boys, just quickly. Name four players that have played for Olympiacos and Villa. There may be
Olaf Melberg.
Malbo's won yet?
I don't think anyone's come from us to them, have they? I mean, from them to us. We haven't signed anyone from Olympiacos.
I think there's maybe a couple of players that played before them. They came to us. Not directly, but...
Give us positions.
Yeah. All right, okay. So I'll give you one clue. Jumper.
Okay.
McCoon. Jean de McCoon.
Jean de McCoon, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's... Who did you say first?
Great jumper. I love that he's... Yeah, the jumper was the only clue we needed. Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so that's two. The other two, I'm not sure you'll get. They played for Villa, but weren't really massive names. A defender we signed the first season back in the Premier League that partnered Tyrone Mings for a bit. We mentioned his first name. Yeah,
Engels.
Bjorn Engels.
Bjorn again. Yeah.
Bjorn again.
And the last one was a left back, French left back, who I think was all right for us, but played under Lambert. It was one of these weird season Premier League players that we signed. Season Premier League players that we signed along the same time as we signed like Philip Senderos and Joe Cole and those kind of players.
Don Levy in the comments is saying Sissoko. Is that correct?
Of course it is.
Yeah, there he is.
Hang on. There it is. Very good. Very good. Gary O'Shea, they've had a weekend off. I think they're going to have a weekend off.
Yeah, they played. They. I think they were 3-0 up at half-time or something last time I looked.
They won 4-1 on Sunday. I've got it here against PAS Lamia.
Terrifying.
Tough game. That's tough.
Tough game. Yeah, sounds like a weekend off almost, but they did play.
Yeah.
They've got this weekend off, haven't they?
I think it's a Greek Orthodox holiday, isn't it? So I think people have got confused and thought that the Greek government have given them the Greek FA have given them the weekend off to play in Europe, but actually it's a bank holiday for them, so that's why they're not playing this weekend. Unlike England, they're playing.
They did have a fixture plan though, because I looked at it before and that's disappeared. Or maybe it was already it was always going to be moved or something.
Yeah, I think I mean I read about it and it was okay. But maybe I'm wrong, but I read a few different things. There was a Greek fan, Olympiacos fan, on the Villa Talks forum that said that's what it was. So I'll take his word for it. Score prediction for before we do that, how would you line up in terms of your first 11?
Who's fit?
Pretty obvious, isn't it, who you pick.
Who's fit?
Get him in.
Yeah, pick the 11 who are fit.
Would you keep Cash, Konsa, Torres and Dean? Or would you put Lenglet, Carlos in?
I wouldn't be putting Carlos anywhere near my team ever again, I don't think.
Midfield, Luiz, McGinn, Diaby, Rogers, or Bailey, Rogers and Diaby and Watkins. Is there anyone else? Kellyman? Irogbuna? Duran? Maybe Duran?
Maybe Duran.
In the midfield.
As well as Watkins.
I mean, I would consider Duran ahead of Diaby, given his performance on the weekend. I could go Rodgers, McGinn, Luiz, Bailey in midfield, and then Duran and Watkins both up top.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I know everyone was bad, but Diaby was really, really poor against Chelsea, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a weird one, Diaby. He's a bit of a conundrum, isn't he? As soon as you think he's struggling, then he pops up with a goal, you think, oh, that's him going to, you know, or an assist. And his numbers are pretty good, though. You think he's going to kick on. He doesn't quite kick on. But I personally would play Diaby and Bailey because I think at home, Diaby and Bailey against Olympiacos, we want to try and blow him out of the water a little bit. I think Duran's a probably better impact sub and probably should have come on against Chelsea a little bit earlier, considering we were playing direct. And Ollie Watkins was struggling, but that's another thing. Put a big Trojan horse up front with Duran in it. I like it. Yeah, good pun. But yeah, okay. Let's do predictions then. Sai's gone for 4-1 Villa. Carl
3-0.
All clean sheet. You reckon?
Yeah.
3-1. I reckon.
I think it's going to be 3-2. I reckon we'll be winning 3-0 and they'll get two late goals and there'll be a nervy one going into the away leg. I hate to say. But
well, I might be, we...
again, What was it you said to him in the group earlier, Carl, about him being a doom merchant? He's bringing it again.
Not normally, bringing us all down.
I'm normally the pessimistic one. Come on, we're not that team anymore, Omar.
No, right, fine. I think we could easily blow them away, and I hope we do. I think we need a 2-goal lead though going into it.
Especially
you don't think we're going to get one.
We do tend to struggle in like those sort of partisan atmospheres, like the Lille game, we struggled a bit. There was another one earlier in the season where we shat the bed. So I think 2-0 at least, I'll feel a bit comfortable, or 2-goal lead, I'll feel comfortable-ish.
Although,
as I said earlier, we've not been great with a 2-goal lead recently.
No, that's usually in the same match, though, isn't it? Maybe it crosses over into a different match.
Yeah, might be different.
I like that. I've got an away ticket, so I'll be going as long as I can find a flight. It's so expensive to try and find one. And I've obviously, if we get to the final, I've got to pay for that as well. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think 3-2, but I hope it's more goals than that. And it'd be nice to just have a cushion going into the away game and let's not take it easy. Obviously, not going to take it easy against the away leg, but you know, do our usual sort of save our legs a little bit in the second leg. Don't go gung ho, contain them, you know, keep the ball a little bit and, you know, keep our fitness up for the Brighton game. Sorry, for the Liverpool game, as well. Let's move on to the Brighton game. Let's do the Villa Vault and we'll then preview the Brighton game as well. And then look at the running a little bit as well, if that's okay. We're already an hour in, so we'll do spend the next 5-10 minutes looking at that. And I've quickly just rustled up a Brighton previous match that we can use as well. But here's the Villa Vault. It's pretty good, right? I think
it is all right.
Yeah, you nicked that one though, didn't you?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Don't know what you're on about.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that on the actual Villa website.
All right. So let's do the quiz bit first and then we'll preview the Brighton game. Mm-hmm. Let's not do the quiz first. First thing I want to talk about is... No, forget that.
Come on, mate. Pull it together. What are we doing?
Which one? What do you want us to do?
I'm doing this a bit, ad-libbing this a little bit. I wasn't expecting to do this, but...
Freestyle.
Let's go back to our first season back in the Premier League under Dino. Away game at Brighton. Not playing so well. Do you remember the score?
No.
You don't remember the score? It's like 4 years ago, boys.
You know me, mate. Give me a 90s one. We never played Brighton in the 90s, did we?
No.
I'm struggling to remember what the Brighton score was early in the season.
6-1.
Oh yeah,
I remember that one.
I'm going to rely on the comments here. So, what have we got? We got some more puns. Oh god, no. Gary's done about 15 puns today. I think
he's smashing it. Yeah, get Gary on.
Pretty good.
Get 6 hours. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. Oh, dear, that's a good one. Good tip, mate.
Just some good travel advice. Good
travel advice, yeah. Welcome to the Travel Channel. Okay, it was 1-1.
1-1.
Which play? Yeah.
Was there a green?
Grealish scored.
To keep us
left.
Up.
Yeah.
Left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who gave the assist?
Was it Dougie?
No, Almo. Oh, was it Dougie?
It was Dougie, yeah. It was a great assist.
Yeah.
You remember.
Great ball.
Great
finish.
It was a kind of classic, just swing my wrong foot at it and hope for the best, wasn't it? It wasn't a refined finish, which is my preferred.
Remind me a bit like Lineker's goal against Germany in the 1990 World Cup. The way he kind of sort of let it run across his body and then just hit it with his left.
But Lineker's was a bit more refined though, because he's cut it back across through the defender's legs. That was like a proper striker's finish, whereas Jack's was just like Right, I'm just going to fucking welly this as it comes across me.
Shit, isn't it? Fucking biscuit shit.
Juggsy's always maintained he's not a good striker of the ball.
That's why he didn't take set pieces.
Yeah.
Which is weird, though, because when he's passing it, like, he always, like, it's a proper, like, the weight is perfect. It's a ping, but dead ball.
Memorable game then, Gary. Yeah, very much so.
Remembered it in the end, Gary. Come on, give us a break.
Yeah. No help. All right, let's name the start 11 then quickly, and then we'll move on to the game quickly. 3-4-3 we played. Grealish was obviously one player. Defence, we had three centre-backs playing.
Mings.
Konsa.
Engels? Again, House. We've already mentioned
House.
Courtney.
Who are wing backs?
Wing backs,
full backs, whatever you want to call them.
Christ.
Taylor.
Who's he?
Neil Taylor.
No.
Target.
Yeah. Right. Not back.
Target. Right back.
We hadn't bought cash by this stage, had we?
No.
We haven't got cash.
There's only two could have been.
What do you mean it could only have been two?
We only two right backs, no.
I can't remember one of them, so it's telling me this.
Almo,
two of them.
You mentioned one, Almo. It's not Almo. He wasn't playing.
Alan Hutton had gone by this stage, surely.
What's his name? Who everyone thought Freddie G.
Freddie Gilbert. Oh, look at this for a midfield partnership.
McGinn?
No.
What?
No.
Was it the loaf himself?
Danny Drinkwater.
Fucking hell.
Marvellous Nakamba.
Whoa.
Fucking hell.
It is amazing that we stayed up, isn't it?
Three up front. No striker. This is when we had no striker before we signed Samatta, I think. So Grealish is
El Ghazi and Trez. But hang on a minute.
What?
So Luiz got the assist, right?
He came on, yeah.
So Luiz was on the bench when we had Drinkwater and Nakamba as our midfield.
We had I hope he'd been
injured.
But back then we kind of might have all put him on the bench ourselves. He wasn't pulling up trees back then, was he?
Yeah, it was his first year in the Premier League. Yeah. Neil Taylor, James Chester.
Yeah, but I mean, Danny Drinkwater had less movement than a tree. So
Henry Lansbury, Conor Harahan, Orlan Ireland, and do you remember this guy, Vasilev?
No. He went to America. Is he American?
Indiana.
Indiana
Vasilev. Yeah.
I mean, it's honestly, let's stop anyone disrespecting Dean Smith because it's an absolute miracle that that team stayed up. Grealish one-man team or not. Like, how have we stayed up that season?
To counter that, AJ, he put most of that team together, I think.
True. Suso did.
True.
Who was the goalkeeper? Sorry, we didn't even talk about the goalkeeper.
Ireland.
Spanish right winger?
Reina.
Spanish right winger, yeah. Pepe Reina. He's a bit far right, isn't he, Pepe Reina? I think.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a gay Portman, Gianna Vasilev. Yeah, he does.
All
right. But,
I thought he meant Carl with his OnlyFans.
So, Brighton predictions, go on. We won't talk about the team because we don't know who's going to be
to be honest, the predictions are completely sort of blind guess, isn't it?
All right, forget about that. Just quick prediction, then we'll talk about the running quickly. Go on.
I'm going to go, I'll go 1-1.
I thought you were going
to say
go on.
Brighton, right? We've unbeaten in six against Brighton, won the last five. It's all, everything is good in our favour in this, like, which makes me feel nervous. But we've won the last five games against Brighton and drew the one before. So we're unbeaten in six. They have failed to score in seven of their last 12 games in all competitions. And they've not scored more than once in any game since they played Sheffield United in February.
Did you see what their goal of the month was, AJ?
Given we have, yeah. Yeah. An own goal. Yeah, that's literally their only goal they've scored in April was an own goal against Burnley. Yeah. So, yeah, they've got a couple of players back. They've still got 7 or 8 injuries, I think. We should win.
Yeah, looking at the injuries, they've got Solly March is out, Ferguson's out, Hinshaw Wood is out, Stupian's out, Matoma's out, Tarek Lamptey, maybe, James Milner, maybe, Van Heck, who's been very good for him this season, probably one of their best players, is out. So, yeah, they're missing a few. I think against Bournemouth, then Enciso back. Pedro is a danger man, I think, isn't he? They had, obviously, Gilmore back as well, who's quite important for them in terms of keeping them tick. Sam Cleary's here. Yeah, he's come back from five-side football. We are going to smash them. Watkins Brace and Buck Rogers. Mm. Yeah, so like, quick predictions, then we'll quickly talk about the running.
AJ, I think we'll win 2-1. Pedro's their top goal scorer this season. He's got 8. It's like, nothing, is it? 19 our top goal scorer's got. Come on, mate.
So, 19, isn't it?
2-1. 2-1 Villa. And then, you know, basically we're in the Champions League, aren't we?
We're already in the Champions League.
Yeah, all right. I think we're going to win. And I think we're going to get a draw against Liverpool to cement it, even though we're not talking about Liverpool yet. But that's another story. Let's quickly then. We've got this 1 hour, 11 minutes in. So just quickly, I wanted to show this stat. This graphic from ABFC Stato, just showing you a consistency of us this season. I think this was a great one. Look, so since game week seven, since game week 7, we haven't been outside the top 5. And we've only dropped out of the top 4 since game week 13, I think 3 times.
Remember game week 20, lads?
Oh, great.
Presumably
times.
after Arsenal, is that?
That was, I think. So Sheffield United, we drew, so we stayed third. I think we came second. What was the game? Was it Burnley, maybe? I think we beat.
I'll tell you now what game week 20 is. Give me a moment.
Here we go. Yeah, I think it might have been Burnley. Pedro is probably.
You're right, mate. Yeah, 3-2 against Burnley. That's when we went second in the league.
And then we went we dropped from second to fourth. That must have been all the games, all the other teams must have played their games and caught up with us. Yeah. And then we probably lost to Man United or someone like that afterwards.
Drew against Everton and then lost to Newcastle.
Yeah.
And then United.
Yeah.
But we beat Sheffield United 5-0 in between.
But shows you how consistent we are.
We've spent 20 game weeks 4-4 higher.
That's mad. So you just count that quickly, by the way.
Yeah, just count it.
Nice stats, mate. I will just say, if you'd shown the Arsenal graph like this last season, they'd have been top of the league for the whole year. But Emery doesn't bottle it like Arteta is. Have you got that Arteta image that I shared on the group earlier, Omar?
Which Arteta image?
Have you not got that one loaded up, ready to go?
Don't stick it up there, Omar.
Omar is
wanking off a dog. Don't put it up.
Sorry. No, I'm looking for that one. Yeah, good way to finish the pod, I think.
You not got that one queued up?
No.
Why do I bother sharing these things?
Didn't finish the doctor dot. Yeah, would have gone top of the shower. Might have been. It doesn't matter, does it? As long as you finish fourth, that's all I care about. Thanks, boys. That was fun as always. I'm going to go finish off my chicken XL burger that I also bought. Is that bad? Might get on the
Pasta La Vista.
Might get on the exercise bike. Might do a quick hour. What time is it? Nearly 10. Yeah, I could do that. Nice. London tomorrow for me. So I won't go to sleep anyway. Boys, enjoy that.
Yeah.
Are we back? Are we back? Still Robbie Keane?
We're so back. We'll just see how long. We'll see how long it goes, won't we?
Yeah.
I was enthusiastic at the beginning. I can't be enthusiastic at the end as well.
He's given everything here, mate.
I've left it all. You know, got two more games this week, and then another one straight after. There's only so much I can give.
Yeah. No. Fair enough. Yeah. Mentally drained, as I said on the. on Twitter or X. Thanks, boys. Thank you for everyone for listening and watching. Good to have you with us. We'll be back. I think we'll be back post Brighton game. Hopefully, we're celebrating being top four and going a long way to being in the final of the Conference League. But yeah, thank you for watching. Please do subscribe and like the video as always. I'm not bothered about subscriptions and likes, to be honest. As long as you enjoy it, that's the main thing.
I am. Like and subscribe, like guys. It. Like and subscribe.
Right, fine. Okay, fine.
Hit that notification bell. That's the other thing they say, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I'm not.
If you want to make sure, you know, you don't ever miss our content, make sure you hit that notification bell.
Can we get 100 likes? Can we get 100 likes? Yeah. It'd be great if we get 100 likes.
And check out my OnlyFans.
50p a go.
Yeah. Only the lonely.
Yeah.
Thank you. And, crap, what am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing.
up the villa. That's what
I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. Yeah.